Welcome to The Masterful Art of Self-Care, hosted by Niti Bywalas. Hi, and welcome to episode 37 of The Masterful Art of Self-Care. So just an update that I apologize, I wasn't able to post anything or publish this episode on Monday. I just came back from Joshua Tree, so with my weekend being really, really busy, I didn't get a chance to just get this out on time. So thank you for your patience. But I'm really happy and excited to present today's podcast episode. So it's with Dr. Christine Henderson. And I actually did this interview back in May of 2019. And really happy to finally get this edited and published and out to you guys so you can listen to it. And I think it fits really well, the conversation that both Dr. Henderson and I have. Fits really well with the podcast episode from last week where I just did an opinion piece on skin bleaching. So we don't talk about skin bleaching per se, but we definitely do talk a lot about beauty products, natural beauty products, toxic beauty products that specifically women of color use and continue to use that are toxic and really harmful chemicals, and how it has a huge impact on, you know, fertility, reproductive health, just overall health for women. So if you haven't heard of Dr. Christine Henderson, she is a professor of public health. She's also a natural lifestyle enthusiast, and she's the founder of Black and Green, which is an all-natural marketplace that is by all Black artisans, and she, her and her company helped to curate that, all the products. And they're sold in different categories like skincare, home, bath, and body, just to help meet the needs of wellness seekers who want to buy Black and also live green. So I will jump right into the interview. I hope you enjoy, and definitely feel free to leave any comments if you find anything really interesting or that really resonated with you. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you and welcome to The Masterful Art of Self-Care. And today I have a special guest with me. Her name is Dr. Christine Henderson, and she is the founder of Black and Green, which is an online marketplace for wellness products. And she'll explain a little bit more, but it's probably one of the first, really, of just bringing Black-owned artisans in the wellness, the health and wellness field and industry, and selling a lot of their products on this online marketplace. So I'll have Dr. Henderson just introduce herself, just tell us a little bit about your background, your story, and then what kind of led you into creating Black and Green.
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk with you today. And oh my gosh, that's such an open-ended question, and I love that.
Okay.
But I'll take 30 minutes, so I have to make sure I give you the shortened version. So,
okay.
All right. A little bit of my background is I worked in hospital administration for about 10 years, a little bit less than 10 years. And I've always had a passion and an interest for health disparities, particularly looking at women of color and how even when we control for insurance and income and education, how their health outcomes were still worse than everyone else's. And we couldn't really explain why. Mm-hmm. And then there was this emerging body of literature around products and the toxic chemicals in our products and how that may be a piece of the explanation for why Black women are having a lot of adverse effects, or why Black women have a higher, you know, incidence rate of fibroids, for example, is that we know that Black women use personal care products a lot more diligently and, let's say, religiously than some other demographics. And so those toxins over time could be bioaccumulating and could be having a lot of these kind of adverse effects. And so I kind of went on my own personal journey of wellness and health, and a piece of that was cleaning up my products and trying to find healthier products. Along that same journey, I read this book called Our Black Year, which was this mother's journey of trying to buy Black for a whole year. She kind of outlined some of the challenges of buying Black, and I kind of asked myself the question, I wonder if I could do both. Could I buy Black and try to find natural organic products that weren't full of all these toxic chemicals. So it just started off as my own personal journey. And then I had friends and family who kept asking me what products was I using. And I started putting spreadsheets together. And then folks kept saying, well, you know what? This is just really too hard. It's too hard to buy from all these companies. I have to go to all these extra websites. Like, how do I know I'm going to get what they really say I'm going to get? And there was just, people weren't kind of willing to do it. So I said, you know what we need? We need a marketplace that pulls all of this stuff together to make it easier for it to purchase Black and not have to compromise. Like, we don't have to compromise quality. We don't have to compromise customer service. We don't have to compromise our health, that we're able to check off all the boxes.
That's great. So how long has this online marketplace been available?
Yeah, so technically Black and Green turned one in February of this year.
Okay, so it's still pretty new.
Yeah, we're still pretty young. We did a couple of months of like beta before we started, but we're still a pretty young company.
Okay, cool. And so with the creation of this online marketplace, what is your hope? I know you spoke a little bit about, you know, at least creating a platform where you can bring, it's like a one-stop shop, you know, so where a woman can go on there and be able to look for all these different types of products. I'm wondering what you're hoping to achieve with this online platform, especially so it's still pretty young, it's in its first year. Like, what is the, I guess, the long range goal, you know, or vision for Black and Green?
Oh, man. So I really don't think many women understand some of the risk associated with the products that we're using. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are kind of passed down from generation to generation. So people just, you know, oh, my grandmother used this face cream, so I use this face cream. Or like, or of course, I actually use fabric softener. I grew up with my mom using fabric softener. And so a lot of these things are so ingrained habits that they're not even things that we think about. So I really want to figure out how to educate people and understand that there are a risk with these decisions, but not only educate and like kind of make you all concerned and worried, but give you a solution. Like, yes, this is a problem, but we already start working on the solution. So it can be like an easier transition. So that's really important to me, just empowering Black women to make better choices for their health. I'm also really passionate about empowering entrepreneurs who are oftentimes, particularly Black women entrepreneurs, who are sometimes left out of the conversation when it talks about entrepreneurship, is helping connect them with the customers who want to purchase these products. So that's really important to me. And just really making myself more conscious about how I spend my money, and hopefully to encourage other people to become more conscientious about how they spend their money, and just making sure that your values align with where your dollars are going. Because in my opinion, that's the way that you vote. Every single day when you buy products, you're voting. And so I want people to be thoughtful when they vote and give them options if they decide that this is the way that they want to vote.
Absolutely. Cool. And I wanted to talk about one of the products that you carry. So the Honey Pot, which I think is like such a cute, like kitschy name. And there's a podcast episode that I did a couple, probably about a month ago or so. And it was about talking about vaginal douching. And I think it was really interesting because part of, you know, just doing a little bit of the history of like why we douche and, you know, the history around it. And it's very true that I think in the women of color communities that the use of douching or those type of products in order to kind of, you know, cleanse, you know, whether it's after a period or, you know, after intercourse, that it's, I think it's seen at least in women of color communities that they tend to use those products a lot more. And yes, I think it's absolutely true, just like what you said, that it tends to be passed down, like because, you know, their mom or their grandma, you know, used it or their aunties used it. So, you know, then they use it. But I know at least specifically for like douching, you know, it's a lot of the chemicals in there are pretty toxic. And, you know, in the podcast, I go into a little bit more detail as to like a lot of the synthetic materials that are used. And I think that it's great that, that there is a wellness product that, you know, is a lot more natural, a lot more, friendly for the vagina, for that area. And so if you can speak a little bit about, you know, for women who are looking at these products and, you know, yes, they've been told or, you know, passed down like, oh, use these products, you know, the ones that you can find at the grocery store that their mom or their grandma use. And then in order for them to kind of make the switch or make the change, how easy, how hard has that been for most women to make?
Yeah, I find that a lot of women want to make a change once they know. The bigger barrier is getting the information out there. And there's a lot of reasons why that's a barrier. So like my background, like my undergrad degree was in the history of science, history of medicine. Mm-hmm. So I'm always very interested in understanding like the history of something and like where did something come from. So like when I hear the fact that Black women spend more money on personal care products, the first thing I ask myself is like, well, why? Where did that come from? Where did that start? And it really started with Black women trying to assimilate into white culture, mm-hmm. and trying to perpetuate this idea that we are equals and we, you know, we're worthy and kind of, you know, we'll dress the part and we'll smell good and we'll be put together. In a part of that routine was really steeped in products, and they were marketed to Black women in that way. They'll make you more beautiful, make you more, you know, acceptable. They'll make you more white, really, is what the undertone was. And so mm-hmm. a lot of that has been passed down. And so it's almost impossible to break the habit of buying the same products that you're buying until you do the work of understanding why that matters for you. So I don't fly above this. Like, I grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas. My whole life I wanted long hair, and I just thought that having long hair would be the best thing ever. And so I had a relaxer at one point. I spent so much money on products and spent so much money on, you know, weaves and whatever you name it, because I was trying to get this long hair. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't even grapple with the products I was using or the danger of the relaxer, because the self-worth I had attached to having long hair was more important than the danger I was putting myself in. Absolutely. So I think that's the self-care work. Like, that's the self-love work. And like, mm-hmm. that's more important than the products. Like, you get to the products after you do the work, right? So like, yeah. after you learn to love yourself, I remember when I decided I wanted to go natural, I was so nervous. And I was kind of like expressing my nervousness to a friend. And I was like, you know, I'm so worried. Like, what is my hair going to look like? I haven't seen my natural core pattern in 10 years. And what if it doesn't look good? And she was like, what do you mean, what if it doesn't look good? It's the natural hair that grows out of your head. It was designed yeah. specifically for your face. It's going yeah. to look good.
yeah.
I was like, oh, that's a good way to think about it. So I just think reframing some of those conversations is like the first step.
Yeah. And I love what you said. I mean, cause I'm, you know, I don't know if you can see a picture of me, but you know, I have dreads and, you know, I did, go natural, you know, I did the big chop. I mean, it was probably been over 10 years. And I remember like, it was like, everything was such a transformation. Cause when I live in the Bay Area, and I think for me is like living in the Bay Area, then I got exposed to farmers markets and really good healthy food, and my diet changed. I, you know, went vegetarian, and then, you know, kind of diving into yoga and learning more about my body, and that changed. And then from there, it just like kind of continued a cataclysm into then, yeah, my beauty products. And, you know, cause I was still, you know, straightening my hair and using relaxers, and it was like, okay, well, you know, if I'm eating this way and if I'm, you know, changing my body in this way, then I should have my hair reflect, you know, the positive changes that I'm making. And yes, I find that it's so true. It's like, it is that self-care, it's that self-love. And, you know, when you are able to make those changes, you know, whether it's, you know, diet or, you know, lifestyle or whatever it is, then I think that will transition into other aspects of your life and into the beauty care products and into exactly. how to take care of your hair or your face. So that's absolutely true. So thank you for bringing up that point. I love that.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, it's a journey for so many of us. And for a lot of us, the door into the journey, particularly when it comes to green beauty and clean beauty or just non-toxic products in general, is our hair.
Because, yeah.
But like, if we're honest, the reason, I mean, at least for me, the reason why I was worried about sulfates or, you know, not wanting mineral oil wasn't necessarily a health thing, just because I thought it would impact my curl pattern. Mm-hmm. Right? So like, I was like, oh, no sulfates and no this and no that in my products. And it wasn't until I kind of start doing more research and understanding the health impacts. And then I was like, wait a minute, if I'm being so conscientious about what I put on my hair, well, what about what I put on my body? Like, the skin is the largest organ. I'm absorbing mm-hmm. this stuff into my body. And I've never read the ingredients of my deodorant. I've never read the ingredients of my lotion. I've never read the ingredients of my body wash or my cleaning supplies or my laundry mm-hmm. detergent. And so I kind of like, oh my goodness, there's this whole area where I just have been going kind of walking blindly and just doing what I've always done, mm-hmm. although I was so conscious about other things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so I wanted to know, you know, what is your take on why there are so few toxic-free beauty products, and especially that are marketed, you know, towards women of color? Because obviously a woman can go into a drugstore or Sephora and just find, you know, a plethora of different types of beauty products that are available. And I think, you know, the tide is turning that more and more becoming more, you know, toxic-free and cruelty-free as well, but none that are really marketed, you know, specifically for women of color. And I'm not sure if you have, you know, any take or, you know, any insight into why it is that there are so few available.
That's a really good question. I mean, what we know is that products that tend to be marketed towards women of color by the big corporations, so the larger brands that you're used to seeing, they tend to be more toxic than the products that aren't marketed towards women of color. So we know that for some reason, the industry, when they're formulating products for women of color, they're a lot more dangerous and toxic than when they're formulating just like for the masses. So that's a fact. And so then the question is, well, why is that? Why does that exist? I mean, I think back to my historical context type of things, the kind of the main products that were kind of marketed towards women were hair straighteners and skin lighteners. Mm-hmm. And those both take really awful chemicals to accomplish. And I almost think it's one of those things, if we told the market that we were willing to put our health at risk for skin lightening and for hair straightening products, then they didn't think we cared about what was any of our other products. Mm-hmm. So we kind of gave them the impression that it wasn't important to us. Mm-hmm. There's also a really strong narrative that Black women don't want to pay for high quality products, which is not true at all. But there's this kind of thought that if the products become too expensive, that women of color aren't willing to make that investment in themselves. And I mean, I do think there's some truth to that. I know I was kind of taught to purchase things by looking about how cheap something is and not necessarily how good something is. Mm-hmm. And so because a lot of Black women or Black people in general shop based off of cheapness, then they try to make products as cheap as possible for us, which means that it's going to have awful ingredients and it's going to have toxic chemicals because you want it to be able to sit on the shelf for 5 years. And preservatives can be really, really harmful sometimes. And so something small batch, you might only be able to keep it for 6 months, which, you know, changes the size of the bottle. And plant-based ingredients are more expensive. And so I think that's a part of the conversation as well. You know, of course, as a retailer, as someone who's curating products, I would like to encourage people to go to retailers that are designed and created for them. It's really hard to go to these big box stores like Target and Walmart or Sephora and expect them to have the interests of Black women at heart. They just won't. And so I think that we sometimes, there's two fights to have. You can fight with a big retailer to try to make them see you and acknowledge you, or you can just do a little bit of extra legwork to find the brands that do that naturally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's absolutely true that, you know, the quality of the products makes a big difference. You know, and just the general, you know, general, you know, taking care of themselves and with it, when they actually read the products and they see what's in it. And then if they see a product that actually, you know, is natural or organic or toxic free, and they just see the quality of the products, and I think then it's going to transition to, you know, wanting them to take better care of themselves and having better quality care for, you know, their body and for their face or for their hair. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, we have to give ourselves permission. Like, I think Black women and this whole idea of the strong Black woman and prioritizing family and prioritizing your job and just putting ourselves at the bottom of the list, sometimes we have a hard time investing in things that are just for us. Mm-hmm. And so that's back to kind of doing that self-work and figuring out, okay, why don't I think I am a priority? And if I do think I'm a priority, like, what are things I can do to show myself I'm a priority? How can I do actions to show myself that I love myself, you know? So, you know, maybe that is investing in a nicer sunscreen. Maybe that is making sure you have a skincare regimen. Maybe that's going to therapy. Maybe that's a gratitude journal. Like, there's a lot of, or maybe it's like a combination of all of the above. But I think that trying to start learning how to be easy on yourself and allowing yourself to have peace and allowing yourself to find like joy and happiness and knowing that that doesn't threaten you being a strong Black woman, I think is important. And I think once we can do that, you know, we don't have to worry about feeling judged because I want to buy organic vegetables or because mm-hmm. I want to buy the cruelty-free, non-toxic, sustainable face cleanser, you know? So I think that I'm a big fan of, you have, like, there's work to be done to get to these places.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I love what you said. I mean, it's definitely an investment in money, but also an investment in time, mm-hmm. You know, both of them in order for us to, you know, get to the point where we want to be at in regards to our self-care. So yes. I wanted to ask, because I know you have spent some time like in public health, and just what are some, so you mentioned fibroids, you know, but what are some other negative consequences that you've seen with your time in public health with consuming, you know, toxic ingredients? So whether that's, you know, yeah. in the body or on the body, you know, that can have a negative impact, you know, on a person.
Yeah. So the data is the strongest around reproductive health. Mm-hmm. So looking at fertility, looking at kind of the age at which we have the age at which Black girls are hitting puberty, looking at fibroids, around the reproductive health is where we have the strongest evidence that the chemicals and products are linked to having puberty early. It's linked mm-hmm. to having an increased number of fibroids. It's linked to having infertility issues. And so there's a lot of products that we're using that are directly linked to those outcomes. I think that's probably where it's the strongest data when we're looking specifically at Black women. Mm-hmm. Now there's tons of other data around sort of cancer and trying to understand the environment, the relationship between the environmental triggers and how cancer develops over time. And there's a kind of an emerging body of literature trying to understand what these chemicals are and how they interact. And there's a lot more work to be done. My kind of stance on it is I'd rather cut something out than to look up in 10 years and be the next talc powder and realize the product I've been using for 10 years. And it took them that long to realize that there was this connection between talc powder and ovarian cancer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to wait until the data proves it after so many people die from it. So with Black and Green, with my own personal life, I try to err on the side of as much plant-based products as possible, even if the data isn't quite there to support that the chemical version is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so I'm wondering, so I think like the work that you're doing is great, and just being able to curate a lot of these products and get it, you know, online and eventually into the hands of, you know, other women or, you know, people, you know, to purchase these products. But I'm wondering, you know, do you feel like your reach, you know, is reaching far enough, you know, to communities of color, you know, for them to have that education and that knowledge that, hey, some of these things that you're using, that you've been using, you know, for 5 years, 10 years, you know, on your face, in your hair, are actually having a negative impact?
No, of course, I don't think our reach is wide enough. I think good work has just begun. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are constantly brainstorming, trying to figure out ways to get that information into the hands of the people, like Black women who are making these choices. And so whether that's writing more blogs, doing more podcasts, I'm kind of thinking about other using the video format, just doing whatever I can mm-hmm. to get this information in front of people to start making changes. We're working with some other professors and researchers at Harvard and GW who are doing research about this to figure out how we can disseminate this information. So there's a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. And we are, you know, every day trying to think of creative ways to get that information out.
Cool. And then, so I'm wondering, just because I'm sure you're very much aware, and especially, you know, being a new mom, that you've heard about the, you know, the high mortality rate, you know, of Black women, whether it's, you know, going into pregnancy or, you know, even postpartum. And I'm just wondering, just in your opinion, you know, do you have a sense of, you know, how much a lot of the beauty products, you know, environmental products, even, you know, whether it's like, you know, cleansing agents or, you know, household cleaners that people use, how much do you think that that might also be having an impact with regards to the high rate of, you know, mortality for, you know, whether it's for infants or for moms, you know, as they're going through pregnancy?
So it's interesting. I think that the high rate of mortality for moms in pregnancy is directly connected to the lack of cultural competency in our hospitals and the over medicalization of birthing. Mm-hmm. One of my midwife said this, and I thought that it was very profound. And she was like, the same intimacy that it takes to make a baby is the same intimacy that it takes to deliver a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And we have kind of removed that intimacy. Then you're under bright lights with these strangers, and it becomes a stress response instead of a relaxation response. I personally think that I'm a big fan of creating solutions,
mm-hmm.
and less of a fan of trying to convince someone powerful to change, to make a change.
Yeah.
Because one, I feel like I have more control over than the other. I worked in hospital administration for 6 years. So, you know, I'm talking here as a bit of an insider, but hospitals are not the, how do I say this? Like, I would never give birth in a hospital if I absolutely didn't have to,
mm-hmm.
Because they aren't designed to listen to patients. They aren't designed for you to do it the way that you want to do it. They are designed to minimize their chances of getting sued and to maximize the revenues they're bringing in. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of encouraging women, particularly women of color, of going back to our roots and having our babies at home, being surrounded by Black midwives and Black doulas who care about you and who love you and who can help bring our babies into the world in a loving way and not a way that's full of trauma. So many women's birth stories is one of trauma at the hospital. I had a home water birth, and it was the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced in my life. Mm-hmm. And I just want to encourage as many other women that that is an option for you, and you don't have to, there's not one to be, it's not, it doesn't have to be fearful. I think that medicine has done a good job of instilling fear in people where they're scared to make a decision outside of the traditional medical model, because like, well, what if something goes wrong? What if? Well, let's not operate in that state. Let's operate in the state of creating peace and creating joy and doing what you can prepare for mm-hmm. everything to go right. And we're going to trust that if some, by a small chance, something goes wrong, that your midwife will be there to guide you and take care of you, you know? And so I'm a big fan of it's going to be very hard to convince and change the whole medical system to all of a sudden value the worth of Black women. It's not going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I'm a bigger fan of Black women who care about this. Become a midwife, become a doula, go into people's homes, and let's start caring for our mothers.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And just starting to empower more and more women and realize like their bodies are resilient and
yeah.
you know, that they can handle. I don't want to like make a blanket statement that, you know, all women, you know, or all people can handle, you know, labor, but that their bodies are strong enough, you know, that.
I mean, your body was designed to do it. Like
yeah.
women, your body, like you don't tell your body to breathe. You don't tell your body to like, okay, baby, today you're going to grow an ear. Today
yeah.
you're going to mm-hmm. grow a toy. Like your body yeah. knows exactly what to do. It does everything. And then when something is wrong, it knows what to do there too. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it works in perfect harmony to make sure that it has the outcome that it needs to have. Like your mm-hmm. body knows, you just have to learn how to listen to it, which is why, you know, I always say, like, if you're thinking about having, you know, wanting to have a kid or, you know, wanting to bear a child, then you want to start doing that work of listening to your body, understanding what your body mm-hmm. is telling you before you even begin to conceive. You want to do that work of eating healthy, having a balanced diet, getting your yeah. stress under control, releasing any sort of negative thought patterns, because all of that will play a part,
mm-hmm.
right? Absolutely. So it's not an easy answer. I think I'm a very big fan of like, we all need to be on a journey to be the best version of ourselves, which is releasing things that are toxic.
Mm-hmm.
One thing at a time, whether it's people, whether it's habits, whether it's products. We need to slowly, as Black women, release toxicity as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cool. So I want to just turn it back on you. And so yeah. for the listeners who don't know, so you have a 2-month-old son. And I'd love to hear just like, what did you do to help prepare? Well, both, yeah, I guess to help prepare, you know, spoke a little bit about, you know, what, you know, Black women should do in order to help prepare before even they think of conceiving. But what did you do in order to just help prepare for your pregnancy and then also for yeah. the birth and arrival of your son?
So I was very intentional about movement. I did yoga all the way up to the week before my son was born. Mm-hmm. And I tried to do that a couple of days a week. And I downloaded a tape called The Spinning Babies, which is, you know, all about trying to get your baby in the right position. And I mm-hmm. started doing that sequence probably after only being 2 months pregnant. So I did that sequence for a really long time to just make mm-hmm. sure that the baby was in the right position. So that was really important for me. Chiropractic care was really important. I was going to the chiropractor every week and I had zero back pain. And I think that going to the chiropractor and getting those adjustments, well, I had zero back pain my entire birth. I had back pain for maybe an hour of my labor and that's it. So, I think that was a big reason why. I went swimming a lot. I think that was really helpful. Just another way to keep my body moving. And it would relieve some pressure because baby would float around a little bit. So swimming was really important to me. Of course, I was eating healthy. So lots of green leafy vegetables. And if I kind of got bored of the green leafy vegetables, then I would drink juice to kind of help keep it interesting. So that was important. I managed my stress a lot. So although I wouldn't allow anything that was stressful or people who are stressful, I really tried to keep it at a minimum. Mm-hmm. I did something called hypnobirthing,
okay,
which is really learning how to control your breath and control your emotions and try to find a place of peace and calm no matter kind of what's happening in the physical world out around you. And so that was really helpful during my labor and just like helpful in life in general. Like I'm learning with having, he's only 2 months, but I'm learning that his energy reflects mine. When I get flustered, he gets flustered. When I calm down, he calms down. And so practicing being calm, even when he's not calm, has been really, it's a good practice for once mm-hmm. you have a baby. The way I like to describe it, in my opinion, is that giving birth is like a marathon. If you don't do any training and don't do any practice and you aren't thoughtful about what you're eating, once you get there, it's probably not going to be pleasant. But if you are practicing for your marathon, I mean, I was doing squats every day and it's called like, you know, to practice breathing through my muscles getting tired, just like I would have to do with the contraction. So if you do the work of kind of practicing for your labor and getting your mental and eating healthy and taking your prenatal vitamins and going to yoga and almost like a prenatal massage was a must, like doing all these things to invest in yourself. I only pushed in my labor for 45 minutes. And I think a big reason for that was because of all the work I had done up until that point.
Mm-hmm. It's huge. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. like, and just to have that knowledge beforehand and not like going into it just blindly, like, or, you know, just like, oh, I trust my body and my body will know what to do. But also, like you are, like you said, you know, putting in the work.
Doing the work, yeah.
To make sure
your body's prepared. I'm going to write a piece about this. Just like, I'm going to probably like having a black and green baby. And mm-hmm. just kind of outline like all the things that I did to try to have a peaceful birth. Like that's what I kept sort of manifesting. I want to have a birth that's full of peace and full of love and not one that's of anxiousness and fear.
Yes, absolutely. Cool. So I'm wondering, just we kind of get close to the end, but I mean, you talked a little bit about what your self-care was, you know, during the pregnancy and leading up to it. But now with the 2-month-old, love to hear, you know, just what is your self-care practice now, if you have one, or, you know, how you've been able to kind of carve out that time for yourself.
I have to be honest. I have to learn again, because something that was really an important piece of my self-care is movement. So I'm the type of person who I meditate in yoga. I have a hard time meditating sitting still, but I can meditate doing a sequence. And I prefer going to a studio and being surrounded by other people is my preference. Mm-hmm. But having a 2-month-year-old, it has limited my ability to be able like to get out the house to do that. And then the first 6 weeks, they tell you not to do anything anyways.
Yeah.
And so that was really difficult for me because that was my way of balancing that I all of a sudden didn't have anymore. So that kind of threw me off for a while. And then like physically, my body looks so much different than how it looked before I was pregnant and how I looked when I was pregnant. And I read a quote somewhere that someone said, you know, after you're pregnant, you have to learn to love yourself again.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important. I think at first I was really like, okay, I'm going to lose the weight and get back and get back and get back. And I think it just dawned on me that there is no get back. Like I will never be, I will never have a body that didn't have a baby. Like you will always, it's new. And so I'm trying to learn how to appreciate the new body and the new me that's afterwards. And it's still a journey and it's still a process. One of the things I'm doing is actually trying to buy clothes that fit. I think I was so concerned, like, well, I'm going to go back to my previous weight. I don't need to buy new clothes. And I think that was stressing me out even more. So I've recently decided that I'm going to invest in purchasing pieces that are, well, invest, I mean, I'm going to thrift them. I'm going to thrift pieces that are, that actually fit me and make me feel, you know, are more flattering. So that way I will hopefully kind of change that narrative around, I have to go back to fit all of my old clothes. No, you don't, Kristen. It's okay. You have a new body now. You have to kind of embrace it. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to do this for years, is develop a home practice. So if little man is asleep for, you know, 30 minutes an hour, it might not be enough to go to a studio and take a class, but maybe I can do a practice at home. And it's so funny because I did it with him when I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. I would do the kind of the sequence for him, but I haven't started to do the sequence for me. So trying to get back to that is important. And you actually just encouraged me. I might go do yoga when we
Okay, that's great. That's good. If you stay And that's huge. I mean, just to find, like, even if it's like 10, 15 minutes, because I have a 4-year-old, and even now, like, I mean, not to say that it's going to get easier. It does get harder, you know, and just to find time for myself. And even if I'm able to carve out 30 minutes, you know, in the day, you know, before she wakes up, like, it makes such a big difference just on my outlook, you know, on how I treat her, on how I treat myself, you know, all of it. So I think that's great. You know, kudos to you. Like, I think even just the clothing aspect, because that was a big thing for me, was, and I still probably even have a pair of jeans that I wore, you know, before I was even pregnant with her, that I still hold on to. And I was like, oh no, well, I'm going to eventually fit into these. And yeah, that's an important piece to look at, is like, that's a huge, you know, part of self-care, is like having that realization that the way your body is right now is okay. And it might change again, you know, in a year or 2 years, but to continue to hold on to the remnants of your past isn't serving
exactly
you.
So, yeah. There's a black owned brand called Taylor J that was, have you heard of Taylor J
before? I haven't, no.
And it's not a maternity brand, but it was started for women who were kind of doing that transition between not being mothers and becoming a mother, and kind of your body being in flux. And so she tries to create pieces that can kind of grow with you. Mm-hmm. So I have a pair of pants in my cart right now that I want to buy. I'm working with a black woman who has a company where she thrifts a box for you. So you kind of tell her what you're looking for, and she does all of the hard work, because I'm not good at this, of going to the thrift store, finding all the cool pieces, putting them together for you, and then sending them to you. So I'm so excited.
I love that.
It's black and green. I get to support a black woman's business, and it's green because it's sustainable, because fashion is one of the places where we get, like, we waste so much money and we waste so much materials. And I decided I didn't want to support quick fashion anymore, which meant, like, I couldn't do your traditional, like, HMMs or Zara's or Forever 21, because, you know, where are those clothes being made? It didn't align with my values, although it was cute. It just wouldn't work. And so I've been struggling. Like, I made the choice not to support these brands, but I really didn't have an alternative. And so I really haven't bought clothes for, like, a couple of years. So I'm really excited to see what she creates for me. I believe it's called, oh, I can't remember the name of her business. It might be called the Working Mother, something like that.
We could send, because I love thrift store clothes, and I don't really shop at box store clothes anymore. So that would be really great.
Yes, I can't wait. I want to, like, see if I can find it, because I was so excited when I found her.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be great if you could share that. So I have one last question before we close up. So for listeners who are on this, listening to this episode, if there's one thing that you could share, like a tip on helping to, because I love the piece of, like, taking out toxicity. So whether it's, you know, in your relationships, you know, in your environment, if it's with your beauty products, but what's one thing, you know, that a person can do in order to just start to make their way on, you know, letting go of toxicity in their life, you know, whether it's, you know, maybe it's in regards to beauty products, like what's one thing that, especially if it feels like overwhelming, you know, or yeah. this is something that they've always used for years and now they have to change up their whole routine. Like what would be one piece of advice you can give to them?
My piece of advice is always start in the area where you don't have a product that you're dedicated to. So mm-hmm. if you aren't happy with your current moisturizer, or if you aren't happy with your current face wash, or if you aren't happy with your current deodorant, start there. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to make a switch for something you aren't happy with than to make a switch for something that you love.
Yeah.
So I always say start where you're the least happy and try to replace your products with things that are more natural and more green, and slowly work your way up to replacing the products that you absolutely love. Mm-hmm. In terms of the most bang for your buck, like this isn't a beauty product, but I always tell people this, is to stop using fabric softener and stop using dryer sheets. At the yeah. core, you're just doing it to make your clothes smell good. And they're full of so many chemicals. It's so bad for you. In particular, fabric softener, the way that it's designed is to sit in your clothes over time. So it's constantly releasing mm-hmm. this toxicity out into your world and onto your skin, like over time. Mm-hmm. And so I always encourage people to cut both of those things out and just replace it with dryer balls. And
yeah.
you just put them in your dryer. And I know everybody wants your clothes to smell good. So you can just put a couple of drops of essential oils onto the dryer balls, throw them in your dryer. It will make your clothes smell good. It decreases the dryer time because it helps move the clothes around, which helps the air circulate better. And you're removing all those toxic chemicals out of your dryer cycle. So that's one of those that I always encourage people to do. It's cost effective. It costs $20 and you can use dryer balls for 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And so it's like an immediate and quick way to save money, and it's better for your health that a lot of people have never heard of.
And better for the environment too. You're and not like throwing away like all those dryer sheets. Yeah. Those
exactly.
are terrible.
Exactly. And I found her name. It's called The Working Beauty.
The Working Beauty. Okay, cool.
Yes.
All right. I'll check her out. Great. Thank you so much, Christian. I'm so, so happy that we finally got a chance to sit down.
Me too. This was so fun. Thank you for your patience.
Absolutely.
Getting me on here. You reached out to me before the baby was even born. So
I know. Yay. That's good.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Masterful Art of Self-Care. For more interviews and inspiring stories from men and women like Dr. Christian Henderson, who are bringing the neglected and seldom talked about parts of our body to the forefront of self-care, please consider subscribing to our channel on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or Spotify. Do you have an interesting story to share? If so, then why don't you shoot an email at tia@themasterfulartofselfcare or direct message me at selfcarephysio on Instagram. If you're liking what you're hearing, consider supporting this podcast. You can always visit the link on the show notes to make a donation. There are a lot of new things happening, and I want you to stay in the know, so consider signing up for our monthly newsletter that is available to you to read up on upcoming podcast episodes, blog posts, and to learn about self-care and its relevancy through other healthcare disciplines. And all of that is available at themasterfulartofselfcare.com. Let's help make self-care more accessible and down-to-earth. Thank you again for listening.